This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Kiev O'Neill of the Odds Breakers will join us. We will go over the Final Four, two games on Saturday, and then, of course, the championship game on Monday night. Open with that in just a minute, and I'll get to some baseball here, but excited to talk to Kev. Maybe get into some NFL too. As I mentioned the other day, these markets are starting to open, these win totals, which a few of them are interesting. And in these futures, Kev is very sharp, you know, in both college hoops and the NFL, college football. So I'm not going to talk any college football, but get his thoughts on mostly college hoops and a little NFL when we talk to him in just a minute. But I'll start with the two games. Talked a little bit about this Monday, and I talked about it again Wednesday with Todd Wishnev. So also mentioned it Monday with the Bear, Chris Felica. Just gathering opinions on this game. I'll start with Duke and Houston. I understand that if you look at the line, there are people that say this should be a coin flip. There's no way it should be 5.5. I understand that. You're paying a tax for a few reasons. It's Duke. It's the brand name. It's been a chalk tournament. And I think people are getting flashbacks of UConn, not only last year, but the year before. And Duke, the first four games this tournament. If you go into this game with the approach that UConn won 12 in a row in the tournament the last 2 years, if you don't count this year, when they won the championship, back-to-back years, 12 tournament wins combined, all covers, and then Duke, four tournament wins, all covers. So that is 16 in a row, straight up against the spread, and a lot of them by a lot of margins. So people are just kind of afraid to step in front of that. And I understand that. I get that these teams played last year in the Sweet 16. A lot of the same Houston players, not a lot of the same Duke players. Mostly a whole new Duke team. The one thing you could take away from last year's game, it was ugly. It was low scoring. It was a rock fight. I do think that'll carry over. I like the under, but I'm going to go with Duke. I just think Duke has enough length, athleticism defensively to bother Houston. And they've got enough firepower on offense to eventually pull away and win the game, you know, 8 to 10 points, 7-10. I don't see this being another bloodbath like UConn made a mockery of all of their games the past 2 years. And again, none of those games were really close, even in terms of the spread. And they were big favorites in all of them. And none of the covers were even in doubt. That's how dominant they were. I don't think we'll get that Saturday, but I do think Duke wins. I do think they cover. And I do like the under in that one. And I'm going to go with Florida. Less conviction on Florida. You know, they've played four games in the tournament. Could have, probably should have lost two of them. Could have easily lost to UConn and definitely should have lost to Texas Tech. It took a mini miracle to get back in that game. Texas Tech couldn't get a rebound. Then they missed 2 1-and-1s, left 4 points on the board at the foul line. And then the barrage of threes from Florida, give them credit, they made a million threes when they needed to. But I'm concerned about Broome. Who knows if he's 100%? Who knows if he goes in the game, you know, 80, 90%, and then he re-injures it, and then that's a big deal. And I do think, even though it's only one data point, they played in Auburn February 8th, the day before the Super Bowl, and Florida won the game by 9 points, got up a lot more threes. That was really Florida's coming out party. And I just think both teams have some advantages on offense. This is a high total. It's a high total for a reason. But I think Florida is, I don't want to say due for, they have not played their A game yet. And their best game of the tournament, really their only good one, because like I said, they could have lost to UConn, could have lost to A&M, should have lost to A&M for sure. Even Norfolk State in the 116, Norfolk State outscored in the last 25 minutes of the game. Their best game so far in this tournament was against Maryland. And that was with extra time to prepare. So maybe Golden struggled here on the short rest, short prep aspect of it. UConn was only one day rest. And then again, last Saturday, Texas Tech, that was a Thursday to Saturday deal. He only had one day rest. Now he's going to have almost a full week, 5-6 days to prepare. You wonder if that's an issue, if they're a little more buttoned up here with more time to prepare and he's just not good on short rest, short prep. Something I thought about, but I do think Florida wins the game. And people could say, just to make cases for both sides, people could say, if you like Auburn, wait a minute. Auburn was laying 10.5 in that game in the regular season. That was okay. That game was a home game. You go from being a 10.5 point favorite to a 2.5 point dog on a neutral court. I'm talking about a 13 point swing. When you phrase it like that, it's hard to argue. And you can make the case that both these lines are a little bit inflated, but I'm going to go with Duke. I'm going to go with Florida. I think that would be a really good title game. I think we'll get a good title game no matter what. And I'm really hoping I've mentioned this throughout the tournament. I'm hoping for a good Final Four. I mean, obviously, I hope my bets win. That's the priority. But just from a fan standpoint, you hope, and we've got these are two. You know, you got to be a college basketball purist. I think the lack of excitement of the tournament has turned a lot of people off, and maybe people that are fringe fans aren't going to tune in. But if you like college basketball, these are two heavyweight matchups. These are four awesome teams, two outstanding matchups, at least on paper. I won't say two great games, because we'll see how the great games play out in a third game on Monday. These should be two absolute fantastic matchups, and then a third fantastic matchup on Monday. These teams are all really good. You look at the KenPom, the advanced stuff, whatever metrics you want to use. We talked about it for a while now, since we started talking college hoops, a couple months back in earnest when football ended, that there was a line of demarcation between the best four teams, and these four throw Texas Tech on the fringe, and then there's a fall off to everyone else, including the St. John's and whoever you want to throw in there. And that has bared itself out. These teams are a cut above. So hopefully, in a tournament that's been awful, let's face it, the tournament's been awful. No, nobody, no Cinderellas. Not a lot of close games, not a lot of upsets. It's one thing if the Chalk's winning, that's bad enough, but the games have just been blowout, starting with that opening Thursday. The last weekend, the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, the favorites went undefeated. Strampa just has not been a lot of juice. There really hasn't. Hopefully, now I'm going to say you can't save the tournament. If we got three great games, that would go a long way to saving face for this tournament, because a lot of people, as great as this Final Four could be, a lot of people just like the upset, buzzer beater, the madness. That's why they call it March Madness, the madness of the first 4 days, with crazy games, great finishes, upsets, Cinderellas. That stuff's all out the window. But if we got three great basketball games, this tournament would be remembered a little bit more fondly, I think, if it got saved by a good championship game here. Hopefully we'll get it. We will see. Been a few years since we got a good title game. Yeah, last year, UConn was in control throughout. UConn buried San Diego State. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, North Carolina, Kansas was pretty good. That was the year Kansas came back. They were down at 14, 15 at halftime. So it's been a few years since we've gotten a good one. Maybe we're in for a good title game, a good Final Four. We'll see how it goes. But the picks for me, Duke minus the five. I'll go under 136. So 136 is out there. And I will go Florida minus the 2.5. If you like Florida, I wouldn't mind playing the money line. Who knows? Maybe they wouldn't buy a point or two, but if you could find a cheap money line there. But if I had to lay it or take it, I would lay it. I think Florida wins, and I think we will have a Duke Florida title game, and we can talk about that Monday on the pod. We'll talk to Kevin O'Neill in a second. Just quickly on baseball, the big story, two things. The Dodgers are 8-0. They're incredible. They're unbeatable. Recording this Thursday, is not that many games are being played. Yankees are about to play the Diamondbacks. Yankees have come back down to earth a little bit after winning the first three. They lose the next two, so maybe calm down with the overreactions with the torpedo bats and hit a million homers. They're going to win all these games. Who needs Juan Soto? I heard that nonsense from people. Oh, we don't need Soto. Okay, sure. Three games into the season, we don't need Soto. One of the dumbest things you'll ever hear. The story, the Dodgers are going to basically win 110 games. I don't think that's an overreaction. They already got eight of them in the bank, and they're just going to keep going here. And it beating some decent teams along the way. I mean, they beat up on the Braves. Cubs aren't bad. And then there was that Tiger series in there last year, and Tigers were a playoff team. So it's not like they've beat up on the Marlins and the Rockies. They had a fairly tough schedule. So that is the Dodgers scenario. And they're not even, don't even have a lead in the loss column at first, because San Diego, the Padres are 7-0, which has flown under the radar as they just swept the Guardians. And before that, they swept Atlanta, which to me is the big story, the big surprise. I know it's only seven games in, but when you're already six back in the loss column to Philly, which they are, that's a hole that's hard to dig out of. Now we got all these extra wild card spots now, which I don't like, which just de-emphasizes the sense of urgency in the regular season. It really does. But in terms of winning a division, I mean, Philly is sitting there with one loss, and Atlanta's got seven, so you're already chasing six. The Mets are pretty good. The Braves, if you're looking to attack this from a betting standpoint, and if you want to tie up your money for the season, plus 180 to miss the playoffs. I remember talking about this bet last year. What was it? 10 to 1, 12 to 1. I forget what it was. Really long numbers. And it came down to the last day. It looked like they were going to gag it up for a while, but they rallied. They made it. And then they won game 162 against the Mets to make it. But at plus 180, I mean, you got to figure they're going to have to get to 88, 89 wins. Now, 89 got them in last year. I was talking about this on the Fox pod. Chris Felica brought this up. Took them 89 last year to get in. And they had to squeak in by the skin of their teeth. And this year, Arizona's pretty good. The Padres, we see what they're doing. The Dodgers are already in the playoffs. Central has a winner automatically. In terms of the wild card, the Mets are good. So there's going to be some competition. The Braves are really going to have to rally here. Now, they get the Marlins on Friday, so maybe they turn it around. But to me, the Braves are the story here and their ineptitude. I mean, you just don't expect the team. I know they'll get Acuna back. They'll get Strider back. And they've had a tough schedule at San Diego. At LA is not easy, but you would not expect 0-7. All right, 2-5. You know, 1-6, you'd be surprised. 0-7. 0-7 is a really big surprise. Yankees play the Pirates this weekend, but it will not be Yankees versus Skeens. Skeens pitched on Wednesday, which is unfortunate. Always like to see Skeens, you know, in these interleague. Really weird for the Yankees. First 9 games of the season, all interleague. Brewers, Diamondbacks, and Pirates. I miss when interleague was special. I miss when it wasn't every day of the year. Now it's like just another game. And the rules are different. The rules are the same in each league. There's no DH. It used to be, all right, the Yankee pitchers never hit. So when you go play the Pirates, now the pitcher hits. It's a different game. It's weird. It adds a little – it was a fun wrinkle to it. Now that wrinkle is gone because with the unbalanced leagues, there's 17 in one league, 15 in the other. You get interleague every day of the season, and the rules are the same. So it just doesn't – it doesn't feel as special. But we don't have a line on that because the pitchers are not listed. But some of these other games, and we do have a lot of interleague, I noticed, on Friday. Mariners-Giants is an interesting one. Rockies are on the road now against the A's are on the road now against Colorado. They're at Coors. That'll be Friday afternoon. A lot of day games on Friday too, which I like. Mets, Blue Jays. And by the way, the A's games, those home games, I'm sure the market catches up at some point, but those have been absolute overfest. All three games have gone over and gone over pretty comfortably. Red Sox, Cardinals. So you got a lot of interleague. Gossman going against the Mets. Blue Jays have not been bad. Blue Jays aren't terrible. Blue Jays are not terrible. They send a decent pitcher to the mound every day. I know you can't count on much from Scherzer. I think he's already banged up. Gossman, Berrios, Bassett, Bowden, Francis, and then if you could ever get anything out of Scherzer, well, who knows? That's not a bad 4 or 5. You got Guerrero there. You got decent offense. That's not a terrible team. I wouldn't be shocked if that's a wild card team. I went and looked that up before the season. I was expecting maybe 4 or 5 to 1. People were off the scent. It was only plus 250, plus 230 some spots. So I didn't think that was worth it, but it's not a terrible team. I do think Toronto's maybe a little bit underrated. As far as these games on Friday, the one that sticks out, Dodgers looking to stay undefeated in Philly. That's a fun series. Lizardo against Yamamoto. You get a pretty cheap minus 140 on the Dodgers, but of course you have the back in your mind, hey, they're bound to lose at some point, and the Phillies are really good. They're home. So no play for me there. Braves, you would figure, get back on track this week as they are finally home, and they are playing the Marlins. So this is one where if you're Atlanta, you never say in early April that you need a sweep, but this is one where you probably feel like it'd be a good thing to get back on track, win 3 in a row, be 3-7 on Monday and feel differently about life. I would think that's the Atlanta approach here. So that's the baseball. As college basketball ends, we'll do, you know, plenty of baseball, plenty of NBA playoffs, NFL draft as we sort of turn the page from college hoops. We've been doing a lot of during March, which we always do during March, but we will do baseball pretty regularly throughout the season as we start to incorporate some NBA playoffs a couple weeks away, which I think they're going to have a good postseason. Should be a pretty competitive postseason. I think it should be a lot of fun. Thought that last year too, and it just didn't pan out. But this year, I think it's a pretty well-balanced field. But college hoops, three games left. The Final Four is this weekend. We will discuss it with Kev O'Neill. That is next. This is Should Have Been More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Been More Podcast. And he is back. The end of college hoops. You can catch him at the Odds Breakers, one of our sharpest college basketball experts. And he joins us now is the great Kev O'Neill. Kev, what's up, man? College basketball is coming to an end. In a lot of ways, it's a relief for me because it's just one last thing. It's exhausting just trying to handicap all this stuff. But how's it going? And how is your tournament gone?
You know, it's funny. First of all, you flatter me. Thank you so much, Will. And thanks for being back on your show. It is interesting. It's kind of like, you do get exhausted. Don't get me wrong. You're doing this stuff every day, and every sport can be exhausting, even if you're, you know, winning. And that's happened to me. It's kind of like, even if you're winning, you still remember some of the bad beats and the tough bets and the things that didn't go right. I feel like I remember more than the things that did go right, you know, sometimes. But, you know, in about 2-3 months, we'll be missing it anyway at some point. So that's like, I kind of look at it, but for me, you know, it's a nice relaxing period where I just bet baseball in the mornings and the nights, and I kind of just prepare for next year's football season and the draft. So it's a great season for me to go into. So I am relieved. Yet, it's definitely a sport that's still my favorite. One of my favorites in college basketball, college football, obviously, and NFL is the other ones. But the tournament started out bad. And when I say bad, I kind of rebounded a little bit on that first Sunday. I was down the first day, kind of even the next 2 days, and then up a little bit in the third day, but overall down. But the next week in the Sweet 16 has been great. I was up every single day. And I kind of tried a lot of first half unders. I just noticed how Michigan State's not hitting anything in the first half. I know Auburn's been really slowing it down. I was pretty keen on that a little bit. Some of the live betting situations did pretty well for me too. I try to send them out only on the TV timeouts or at halftime. It's hard to do something like that and say, I'm going to take a live bet with 9 minutes left, right? Unless there's a real timeout called. But otherwise, it hasn't been my favorite tournament year. Definitely a chalky tournament, even more chalky than I assumed, Will.
I love this tournament. It's been my favorite event of the year. I get so excited for it. Gotta admit, it's been a dud. Now, part of it is having high expectations and being so excited for it, but a lot of blowouts, a lot of chalk. I don't know. I hope this isn't the new tournament with this new age of NIL in the portal and these teams in the mid-majors just having a hard time. The Danny Wolfs of the world going from Yale to Michigan. That, Iona has Clayton, then he goes to Florida. That sums it up right there. Iona, if Iona has Clayton or Yale has Wolf, they got a chance in these games. If they're going to go to the bigger schools, the rich get richer. It's tough. Do you think this is kind of going to be the new way of life here?
Yes, but I wouldn't say it's to a great extent. The transfer rules have been in there for a couple of years that you don't have to sit out a year. Remember back in the day, we have to sit out a year even. The rich were already pretty rich. I mean, there's money under the table. They knew that going to Duke, going to, UConn, going to some of the big basketball schools, Kentucky, they knew that there was going to get them to the NBA quicker anyway. So it's not like the talent didn't go directly to them. But now with the transfer portal, I do agree with you. There's going to be a little bit of a separation, right? I think it's going to be harder to see some Missouri states, coming up, right? The Drakes are going to have a tougher time. The Zags have made it through all that, right? So it's good for the Zags. They made it through all that. But when you're an up and coming program like a McNeese State, right? I think that there's going to be some brakes pumped on that, which sucks. But at the same time, hopefully they get some kids that went to Kentucky that weren't quite going to get the playing time, and then they think they're better than the starter, then they move down to McNeese, and maybe some of those players moving down help out. But what I will say, Will, is this chalky tournament ones and twos, it's you still are not going to get this as much because an Arkansas was a 10 seed, right? You're still going to get those teams that had a ton, still have a ton of NIL that they spent or that just weren't so good during the regular season, but they might be a 6 seed or a 5 seed, and then you're still going to get a Final Four with, a one, two, and maybe a four and a six or something, right? I still see that happening because the NIL is not just going to be, it's not like Duke can pay everybody a ton of money. These football schools have a ton of money too, like the Texas A&Ms and the Michigans and stuff like that. And I still see them making Final Fours.
Yeah, and I mean, even though if this is the new way of the tournament and it's going to be more chalky, it's not like we're never going to get an upset again. It was just last year, NC State needed to win their conference tournament, and next thing you know, they're in the Final Four 2 years ago, Florida Atlantic, and 3 years ago, St. Peter's. So maybe it's just an aberration, but it's just from a logic standpoint, it does make sense why this would become more chalky. I'll give you the lead in terms of these two Final Four games. Side total, you got four options. What's your favorite of the four?
So it's the side and total in every game you're saying.
Yeah, the two games.
My favorite is Duke minus 4.5. I mean, it's five really most books, 5.5 with juice. DraftKings and FanDuel like to put hooks up there. They don't really sit on whole numbers too often. They don't like pushes. We don't like pushes either. But they'll have the 5.5 juiced at minus 120. It's Duke, and it's Duke because I feel like they have the extra gear, and we've seen it a few different times, but I feel like Florida is just too inconsistent right now. Before the tournament started, when Flagg was injured, I was kind of leaning Florida, and Florida was super hot, but then you kind of see how the end of the season has beat them down a little bit. They should have lost to Texas Tech. They really could have lost to UConn.
Absolutely.
And there's some luck involved that they didn't, and some clutch play, but they're playing with their food too much, and they look mentally fatigued. They won their tournament, the toughest conference in all of college basketball, and that's taken a toll on them mentally. And you can see it in this tournament. And so I've shied off on Florida. Auburn, the broom injury, and we're kind of even talking about this game a little bit. I don't know what to expect. I still think his right elbow's limp. Hell, it could be even hurt way worse than we think. And then he's just being quiet about it. And maybe we won't know anything until the game or even a little bit before the game. There's no reason to rush into this bet. Broom came back in, but he's a left-handed shooter. But once he gets banged around and once Florida knows he's compromised, they're going to go at him. So we need more information on that. Houston, God, I love the way they're coached. Kelvin Sampson, give him a ton of credit. The guys are together, but this is just still a team without Jamal Shedd. I don't trust Cryer that much. I know they have some guys that step up, but I think the Big 12 was a little bit easier, as well as the Big 10. You can make that argument, right? And I think they hit some of their threes against some pretty bad teams. And I just think Duke's got an extra gear above them. Houston ranks in the 270s for height. Duke ranks number one. Their shortest guy is 6'4", 6'5", something like that. It's not only that they have height, they have talent. You saw Houston against Purdue struggle down low. It's like Purdue has nobody down low. That was their weakness, and they couldn't even attack them there. Tennessee was just completely incompetent. So, I can't really take anything in that first half. I'd have to say Duke minus four, five. I took minus 4.5. That's the only play so far that I've made, Will.
Who's in the championship game and who wins? Sounds like you like Duke to win the whole thing, probably.
I do like Duke to win the whole thing. I've been kind of doing money line rollovers on Duke and Florida that haven't been paying so much, but I've been also parlaying them together. I sent you and a few other buddies some texts about that, but that's been working out really well for me. Now, I think that if gun to the head right now, I guess I would take Florida, but if Broome's healthy, I like Auburn. Don't get me wrong, Florida's great, and they have some big guys like Condon down low, and like you said, their transfers are really hitting for them, and Clayton is the most clutch player in the league. But man, Auburn has just been really turning on the second halves. So, they never say die. This team's kind of gelling together. Florida turns the ball over way too much right now. I don't know how they're surviving these games, but they're sloppy and they're not playing crisp basketball. But Auburn, they can play with Florida, in my opinion, when they're healthy. And guys like Denver Jones and Dylan Cardwell, and how about Pettiford, man? Pettiford has just been clutch shooting three-pointers throughout this tournament, So I almost feel like Auburn feels a little bit slighted not winning the SEC, and they're just playing better basketball than Florida. They're not playing great basketball. They're playing better than Florida. I got a healthy Broome. I'll take Auburn against Duke, and I'll take Duke to win by 6 or 7 points.
All right, most outstanding player. I didn't prep you on this, so if you don't have anything, don't feel free. I'm just curious from and these are hard to find. I don't get these in Connecticut, but some offshore have them. Flagg is the short shot plus 110, as you'd expect. Clayton Jr. plus 400. Cryer and Broome both around 8 to 1. Then there's a drop off where everyone is 20, 30 to 1 after that. I know I did the Bear Bets podcast. Sammy P brought up Knepel for Duke at 35 to 1. Pettiford is 22 to 1. Any of those names draw interest to you, or is this not a market you have any interest in?
Kneipl would be the only one I looked at other than Flag. Unfortunately, this is a voted on thing, right? And
Yes.
how those things go. It's like you're
Popularity
going to,
contest.
and not just that, you're going to know more than most of these voters. You're going to know about Kneipl there, unless really the media talks about him during the game. He's not going to get the credit. Cooper Flag is the play for that. And I think because I like Duke to win it all, I think Cooper Flagg gets it. And if you want to make some arguments, Clayton has been more valuable to this team just to get him there. I mean, we saw Duke without Flagg, right? We saw Duke in their tournament without Flagg win it. So it's like this Duke team is just stacked, but I just feel like it's their year again and they're on a mission. I don't like Duke, don't get me wrong, you know that, but I have to separate that when it comes to betting. I think Duke is the best team this year. I wish I could see them face UConn last year and see who wins that. That would be a really fun matchup, but I would say Flag is the only one I would bet in that situation.
Yeah, and you can get Duke at some places even money and Flags plus 110. So is the juice really worth the squeeze to get an extra $10 on your $100 bet in with Flag? Probably not, I wouldn't say. If you like Duke, probably just play Duke. Any parting thoughts on these games before I move on to some football stuff?
This Auburn total is a little high, in my opinion. It's getting to crunch time. I think there's going to be nerves, at least for the first half. I didn't bet it yet. I'm going to wait. I don't really want 75 and a half in the first half. I'd rather have 76, 76 and a half personally. But, right now the total is 159 and a half, and maybe that goes down a little bit. Any total, and this is a Kyle Hunter stat, 156 and a half or higher in Final Four games. There's only been four of them. All four of them went under. So that small sample size, I mean, it's just not many totals over 156 and a half. They all went under. So I definitely would lean to the under in this game anyway, the way Auburn's been slowing it down and playing the game and how inconsistent Florida's been starting. But I might just grab the first half personally.
Alamo Dome is the venue. Does that factor in at all for you? It is technically a football stadium, 73,000 capacity. Does this matter at all to you?
It's close to Houston. It's funny, if you really think Houston has a chance against Duke, I would look for most outstanding player, there, maybe Uzan or something. But I think that there's going to be plenty of Duke fans. Tony Romo's gang's probably going to show up, and there's just a lot of big money Duke fans out there, and they just became Duke fans because they didn't go to a big college. I feel like people that went to the Tennessees and the Kentuckys, and the Wisconsins, even like me, and we like our college. You go to a small college and you become successful in life, you're probably a Duke fan, so I feel like they are going to show up. I would say it's probably going to be 60-40 Houston over Duke. Harder to shoot, lean more towards the under because of that low venue. Definitely when it comes to these big arenas, you want to look towards the under. This is a very low total for a Duke game, though. That scares me a little bit. A lot of people do not talk about Duke's defense. I think Duke's defense is also the best, even though they're ranked fifth in efficiency on KenPom. That's only because they play fast. If they play the same speed as Houston, I think they'd be number one. I think Duke's got the better defense. A lot of people look like maybe a team total under on like a Houston possibly, and you're at 65 and a half, 66 for that. So I can see that, but I do see enough Duke fans to be there to help them get over the top.
All right, NFL lines are up, markets are up, over under wins, divisions. Anything jump out to you at first glance?
Well, you're just in time to talk NFL because it just finished our Pythagorean win total calculation, Will. And I do this every single year. It seems to be a pretty popular article when we put it out at theoddsbreakers.com. But man, there's some huge discrepancies here. And just for anybody that doesn't know yet, Pythagorean win total just means you take the kind of points and then you put a function on it. The Pythagorean theorem is just, the closest point between A plus B plus C. You do the squares of each side, and then you d divide the square of the other one, and you get the actual answer, right? It's explained in the article. But what it means is that some teams score a ton of points and give up not many points, but just because of bad luck, they didn't win many games, right? So they might have 8 or 9 wins when they should have won more. The same thing is on the opposite. So the Kansas City Chiefs is on the opposite, probably the most I've ever seen in my entire time doing this. The Kansas City Chiefs, they won 15 games last year. They scored 379 points and gave up 326 points. And an evenly distributed win-loss, you're looking at 9.86 wins. That's adjusted for turnovers. That's a massive 5.14 game discrepancy. I've never seen one this big when I've been doing this. And the Vikings is pretty big too at minus 3.44. So, I look at this and just seeing if teams have overachieved or underachieved. If you look at some of the advanced metrics out there, even team rankings has a luck factor. They have Kansas City Chiefs luck factor higher than any other NFL team, I believe, in history that they put there. And it's, well, there's clutchness. Don't get me wrong. There's plenty of clutch and good coaching and good quarterback play when it comes to the Chiefs too, but this is just too big. And then I look at the Chargers here, right? The Chargers are interesting because if you look at the second place teams, Will, that's who the Chargers play at large, right? That would be the Miami Dolphins, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Colts. You know, you can take the third place team, which is the Denver Broncos, who gets to play the Jets, the Bengals, and the Jaguars. I mean, I personally, as for the Chargers, would rather play the Dolphins, the Steelers over the Bengals, and the Colts and the Jaguars are really a coin flip right now. At least the Jaguars have a quarterback. They have a new coach coming in, you know. So there is a lot of reasons to like the Chargers over their 9.5 win total. And you know me, I bet on coaches. Harbaugh is a great coach. I think you're going to see some regression to the Chiefs. And I think you're going to see the Chargers kind of keep marching on here. I know they replaced some guys, but they did get Najee Harris. You know, they got some good guys from free agency. They still have a very beastly offensive line, man. And that's the kind of way that Jim Harbaugh likes to win. So, you know, just kind of taking a shot at the Chiefs, knowing that the Raiders are still going to be pretty bad this year. I know the Broncos are going to be good. I took the Chargers at plus money, plus 110 on FanDuel, over 9.5 wins, just based upon the fact that they're going to have a pretty favorable second place schedule.
Yeah, and that's Harbaugh. That's been his MO. It was that way at Michigan, where he's slowly creeping up on Ohio State. He had the bad year and the COVID year, but other than that, it was almost make it, almost make it. Then he makes it sort of baby steps. Then he takes the giant leap. So I wonder if he's going to follow that same path with the Chargers. I don't know if you have anything on this team, and I haven't really done much research other than just the sort of the blink test of looking at it. I was shocked, New England. I am shocked. New England is 8.5. I know May was pretty good at the end of last year. We're really expecting this team to be 9-8. Look, it's the NFL, anything can happen. If you go over 500 and you beat me, you beat me. That's just one where, on principle, I don't think they should be 8.5.
I mean, I was excited to look at them and I saw it at 8.5. I'm like, oh my God, the books are also excited to put that up there. You know, they're smart too. I mean, Vrabel's a great coach and he shouldn't have been fired. Vrabel is a perfect fit for this organization. They have their quarterback now, they have a ton of money to spend. But the books drop that number up there. It's like you would think it'd be 6.5, right? Or something like that. But they drop 8.5 and it's minus 110 on each side. It's a little too high, man. And you know, you have to wonder what's going to happen with the Dolphins a little bit and with the Jets, who have Justin Fields. You know, I expect the Bills to be right up where they belong, but man, it's a little too high for me. You know, it made me want to lean under it. You know, you get excited about some of these things, but they're smart too. The books know coaches, the market knows coaches, right? I like to give the market more credit than the books, but the books really hung this number up there. I don't think they hung up anything much lower than an 8.5. So they really got it right on Vrabel. It's a number that's a little bit too high. I think it should be 7.5, maybe 7.5 juice to the over, you know. But unfortunately for the Jets, you know, or I'm sorry, the Patriots, they get the fourth place schedule. And you know how the NFL always likes to reset themselves. A fourth place schedule is great. And being that the fourth place schedule, they're playing the Raiders, they're playing the Browns, and they're playing the Titans for their at-large games. Well, so that, I mean, that's really what helps them out a lot.
Yeah, and again, May looks promising, but he's a guy, he runs around a lot. He's athletic, so those guys are always more prone to getting banged up. He got banged up a couple of times last year. Just, boy, that's a lot of respect to expect them to go 9-8 or better with Vrabel. With I understand that, man. I just thought that one was a little high. Anything else jump out to you? I thought Minnesota 8.5 was interesting. Go ahead.
Here's some weird stuff. You know, it's really weird when it comes to scheduling for the NFC. If you're looking at a last place team, you know, let's look at like the Saints. The Saints, you know, you think a last place schedule is great. Well, the Saints have to play the Bears with a new coach. Maybe that's a little bit harder than you think. And then the Saints have to play the 49ers. They're at large because 49ers took fourth place in their division. So now they got to play the Niners. And then, you know, the Giants, I guess, is the easy pass for that one still. But man, I mean, for a fourth place schedule, I'd almost rather have the third place schedule where you get the Packers, the Panthers, the Cardinals, and the Cowboys. But I don't know. It's pick your poison. I just kind of felt like seeing the Niners down, getting a fourth place schedule themselves is why their win total is also up to 10.5. So, you know, kind of be careful with that. You know, when injuries completely derail a team and you know they're going to be pretty good the next year, like the Niners, it really throws some of these totals out because you have to understand who these teams are going to be playing. Now, the schedule's not out just yet, and there's going to be your spots where your international games are going to take effect, the bye weeks, the long rest, the short rest, and things like that. But kind of be aware of at least who they're playing before you make some of these bets, because it's going to move when the market catches up.
One more thing, this is what I meant to bring up. It's subtle. It's not going to matter for a lot of these teams, but overtime now, they pass the rule. Both teams get the ball. That's going to lead to more ties. Ties are not wins. So chances are that's an interesting over-under. How many ties will there be this year with the new overtime rule? Probably get a couple. I mean, usually get maybe one a year, one every other year. I'd have to go back and look. But I wouldn't be shocked with the rules now of, hey, you get the ball, I get the ball. A touchdown doesn't necessarily win it. Wouldn't be unusual for I get a field goal, you get a field goal, and we just kind of we both go home with our tie. So maybe you get two, three, four ties, and that actually I don't think is factored into these win totals. So ties hurt you if you're betting overs.
They kill you if you're betting overs, and they also kill you if you're betting Survivor.
Yes, good point.
And I already sent out a tweet and tagged Mike Palma. I'm like, dude, this is not cool. It's hard enough to get through their 20 game Survivor, and now you're going to put the more factor of ties in there. I think the NFL should have had it so both teams get possession. And there is no extra points. You have to go for two, okay?
Yeah.
Because I think that makes more variance in it, where there's less chance of a tie in that situation, just because it's harder to get two necessarily. Even though expected value of 2 points is more, it's just half the time you're going to get a 2 point conversion made from a extra point, right? So I think they should have done that, just because we don't want ties in general. Ties suck. Baseball doesn't have ties. It's not cool to have ties, in my opinion. I understand the roughness of the sport, and that's why they're not going 15 minutes. I don't like the 15 minutes either. I just think you have to make it more. Don't get me wrong, I do like both teams having an offense and an advantage to do it, but put the 2 points in there so it's not a tie.
Yeah, and I don't get too worked up about having ties because they're so rare. All right, once a year everyone ties. It's kind of a cool, rare thing where, man, it's a tie. We all kind of move on, and you look at that weird 8-8-1 at the end of the year. Oh yeah, they had a tie. So it doesn't bother me, but I agree. Adding the 2 point would make it less likely to tie, but I do think it is something to keep in mind with Survivor. I hadn't thought about the Survivor, but over under season win totals, you're generally I think better off betting unders. If you just do the math in terms of expected wins anyway, and if you're going to add in a few more ties, that adds extra value.
Oh yes, it actually helps the under for sure. I mean,
Yes.
that's definitely not a win, and you can only go up with season win totals. So that's how it is. It's like it's an L on both sides,
Yes.
basically. So that is a great point. Most likely, probably look to some of the unders with the tie factor. So check out what these teams should have done last year. We're gonna have that article out and the podcast out by Monday, so you can kind of see where they sit as far as the way they scored points and the way they gave up points, and make your decisions. And us at the Oddsbreakers, we're going to go in depth on every single division and every single team, and podcast about it all summer.
If you're getting ready for football season, it is a must read, must listen to. Kiev, you're the best. What else? Where else can we find you?
Yeah, so always tweeting on Twitter. So check us out on X, I should say. And we have great information on there. We have baseball's rolling, and I love baseball, and we're going to have some, probably two to three myself articles out per week, just on a free pick or so. And all my free picks were also premium. I'm not just one of those people that are like, oh, this didn't make my premium. If I'm betting it, I'm putting it as either a premium or adding also a free pick. So these are plays that I'm putting my money on, as well as everybody else that's our members. So, make sure that you check that out, the Odds Breakers, and have some fun with us this summer, and be looking out for those future bets, because we love to have fun with that, and sometimes we hit a diamond in the rough.
Gav, you're the man. I'm sure we'll reconvene here, give you a little break before football season. We'll do it again soon, hopefully. And I appreciate the time. As always, good luck this weekend.
Thanks again, Will. Best of luck to everybody.
All right. Thank you to Kev O'Neill. Rate, review, subscribe. Go to goboys.com. Check out the Discord there. We will be back Monday with a national title game to discuss. See you then.